Kirtan all right tonight? Thank you for helping. No school tomorrow? Did you go to school today? Good day at school? Did you have an examination? Did you get in a fight? Boring? Did your mom give you a sweet for lunch?
Sorry.
He needs sweets for his lunch.
No.
No. Okay. Do you like sweets?
I'm sweet, so I'm not feeling well.
Oh, are you ill? Are you sick? Little? Huh? I'll ask your mom. She knows. There's a saying that they ask some child, little girl, 6 years old, what is a sweater? Or a jumper, as they say in Australia. And the answer was, a jumper is the thing that you have to wear when your mother feels cold. You like that one, Sita? Next time you keep it. So Mother Ganges... Huh? Mother Ganges... This is only the beginning of this, so you should hear what's next. There's an incredible story coming up. Most amazing story is going to come up. The story of Saudas. Very amazing, very typical of what the material world is like. But right now, we're hearing about Bhagiratha. His reply to Mother Ganges, when she feared to come. Why did Bhagiratha want her to come? He had pleased her by his austerities and devotion. And she feared, he wanted her to come to, so the Ganges water would come upon his forefathers and deliver them. His uncles, or his forefathers. But the Ganges had two fears. First, that all the sins of those who bathed in her would contaminate her. And secondly, how would the strength of her falling from so high be able to be sustained by the earth? So Bhagiratha allayed her fears by saying, those who are saintly because of devotional service and are therefore in the renounced order, free from material desires, and who are pure devotees, expert in following the regulative principles mentioned in the Vedas, are always glorious and pure in behavior, and are able to deliver all fallen souls. So pure souls. When such pure devotees bathe in your water, the sinful reactions accumulated from other people will certainly be counteracted. For such devotees always keep in the core of their hearts the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who can vanquish all sinful reactions. So that is actually the key. And first of all, this is what it means to be a devotee. And that is the key to making or to keeping one's heart pure. It is similar as an example to how do you keep all the darkness out of the room. Very, very simple. If one makes an extraneous effort to remove the darkness, it just simply won't be, if one focuses consciousness, his attempt on the darkness, he'll never be able to remove it from the room. But simply by putting on the light, automatically the darkness is gone. So the light has to be put on. And in the analogy, the light is keeping Krishna always in the core of one's heart. And to do that, one's heart has to be fully cleansed. Otherwise, No matter how hard one tries, the modes of passion, the modes of ignorance will not allow one to keep Krishna within the core of the heart. And what's the process of keeping Krishna in the core of the heart? With a pure heart, it's always desiring to please Him. Chetasasavakamani mayasanyasimapra buddhi yogamapashitam machita satatambhava. If one is thinking naturally, spontaneously, out of devotion to Krishna, how can Krishna be pleased? How can I please Krishna? That is keeping Krishna in the core, in the heart. And then ignorance or darkness will have no standing within the heart. So this is what it means to be a pure devotee. And such a person, because Krishna is purifying, fully purifying, such a person who carries Krishna always within the core of the heart will be able to purify everything, even the Ganges. Purport. Mother Ganges is available to everyone for bathing. Therefore, not only will sinful persons bathe in the Ganges water, but in Haridwar and other holy places where the Ganges flows, saintly persons and devotees will also bathe in the waters of the Ganges. Devotees and saintly persons advanced in the renounced order can deliver even the Ganges. Tirtha kuranti tirthani svantasthena gadabhritaha. Because saintly devotees always keep the Lord within the core of their hearts, they can perfectly cleanse the holy places of all sinful actions. Therefore, people in general must always respectfully honor saintly persons. It is ordered that as soon as one sees a Vaishnava or even a sannyasi, one should immediately offer respects to such a holy man. If one forgets to show respect in this way, one must observe a fast for that day. This is a Vedic injunction. One must be extremely careful to refrain from committing offenses at the lotus feet of a devotee or saintly person. There are methods of prayaschitta. What does prayaschitta mean? Yes, atonement means to perform some pious act to remove the result of an impious act, a sinful act. There are methods of prayaschitta or atonement, but they're inadequate to cleanse one of sinful reactions. One can be cleansed of sinful reactions only by devotional service, as stated in regard to the history of Ajamil. Kechit kevalaya bhaktya vasudeva parayana agam dunvanti katsneya niharami vabhaskaram. Only a rare person who has adopted complete, unalloyed devotional service to Krishna can uproot the weeds of sinful actions with no possibility that they will revive. He can do this simply by discharging devotional service, just as the sun can immediately dissipate fog by its rays. So in the first chapter of the sixth canto, the question is asked, because at the end of the fifth canto there's so many descriptions of all the hells that living entities go to. So Maharaj Prickett asked, how could someone be delivered from hell, from getting all the reactions to his sinful deeds, be saved from so much suffering? And Sukadeva Goswami's first reply was that one should perform atonement. And that atonement was compared to the burning of bamboo. It immediately destroys the bamboo. But if anyone has had any experience with bamboo, although the bamboo stalks may be burned, the roots are very hardy. And very soon after the bamboo is burned, the roots will start sprouting shoots again. So similarly, prayaschitta causes that type of purification. It removes the external manifestation of the problem, but doesn't get to the core of the problem, the root of the problem. So after explaining that to Maharaj Prickett, Maharaj Prickett actually rejected that, saying that we've seen that people have performed prayaschitta, people know that they're going to get punished, people have gotten punished, but still people keep on doing inappropriate things. So he didn't accept that that was the proper means because of purification. And then Sukadeva Goswami eventually express this using a different example for bhakti, not the burning of the tree and leaving the roots, but niharam eva bhaskaram, when the sun arises, the fog is dispelled. This morning there was fog, but soon as the sun comes, the fog is burnt away and there is nothing left. There is no root of the fog remaining. But this devotional service, so agam dunvanti karsana, completely, the agam, the sinful tendency is removed completely from the heart if one is actually a devotee, loves Krishna, puts Krishna first. This is love, this is devotion, this is what it means to be a bhakta, Vaishnava. And therefore, Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita that immediately, if one performs continuous devotional service, sagunan samatityaitani, immediately rises above the forces of material nature, because he has no false ego. He has only real identity. I want to please Krishna. Brahma Bhuya. And then he's situated on the Brahma platform, the spiritual platform. Niram eva bhaskaram, with no possibility of returning. This is the potency of pure devotional service. If one is under the protection of a devotee and sincerely renders service unto him, by this process of bhakti yoga, one is certainly able to counteract all sinful reactions. So this is what the potency of a pure devotee, and therefore he has the potency to purify even the Ganges. Like a cloth woven of threads extended for its length and breadth, this entire universe, in all its latitude and longitude, is situated under different potencies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is the answer to Ganga's first question, how will the earth be able to sustain the force of me coming down? So everything is resting on Krishna's potencies. Lord Shiva is the incarnation of the Lord, and thus he represents the super soul and the embodied soul. He can sustain your forceful waves upon his head. After saying this, Bhagiratha satisfied Lord Shiva by performing austerities. O King Prickett, Lord Shiva was very quickly satisfied with Bhagiratha. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The word asu atushyata indicates that Lord Shiva was satisfied very soon. Therefore, another name for Lord Shiva is asutosha. Materialistic persons become attached to Lord Shiva because Lord Shiva bestows benedictions upon anyone and everyone very quickly, not caring to know how his devotees prosper or suffer. So if someone wants something, they pray to Lord Shiva and Lord Shiva will benedict them with that thing, but he doesn't care what will happen as a result of that benediction. Maybe that benediction isn't good for the person, but Lord Shiva will still give it to him because out of his pleasure, he's so liberal. He's so easily pleased. So therefore, people wanting material things will tend to worship Lord Shiva. And they tend to worship Lakshmi Devi or Durga. But very rarely will someone worship Krishna. Because Krishna only wants to give the best thing. And what is the best thing? His devotional service. Because material things, having those things, increase our desires. And if we have so many material desires, we'll remain forever in the material world. Why don't we want to be in the material world? Do you know?
So we can go back to Krishna?
Yes, if we're in the material world, we can't go back to Krishna. And if we're in the material world, oh, we're going to happen when we hear about sodas, what happens. Do you know the story of sodas? Are you going to be able to stay for the rest of the class? You'll find out. But it's very frightening. Do you want to be frightened? I thought so.
You
listen very carefully, then so worship of Krishna brings different results other than worship of Lord Shiva. So although materialistic persons know that material happiness is nothing but another side of suffering, they want it, and to get it very quickly, they worship Lord Shiva. We find that materialists are generally devotees of many demigods, especially Lord Shiva and Mother Durga. They do not actually want spiritual happiness, for it is almost unknown to them. They do not. But if one is serious about being happy spiritually, he must take shelter of Lord Vishnu, as the Lord personally demands. Sarvadamam pratyaja mame kam sharanam vraja ham tam sarvapapebhyo mokshyishyami ma sucha. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. So, Bhagirathi Maharaj, you worship Lord Shiva. Ganga Devi agreed. And then when King Bhagiratha approached Lord Shiva and requested him to sustain the forceful waves of the Ganges, Lord Shiva accepted the proposal by saying, "Let it be so." Then with great attention, he sustained the Ganges on his head, for the water of the Ganges is purifying, having emanated from the toes of Lord Vishnu. The great and saintly King Bhagiratha brought the Ganges, which can deliver all the fallen souls to that place on earth where the bodies of his forefathers lay burnt to ashes. Bhagiratha mounted a swift chariot and drove before Mother Ganges, who followed him, purifying many countries. So therefore, because Bhagiratha Maharaj brought the Ganges to the earth, the Ganges River is also called the Bhagirathi. So they reach eventually Bhagiratha's chariot, and the Ganges following reach the ashes of Bhagiratha's forefathers, the sons of Sagara, who were thus sprinkled with water from the Ganges. Because the sons of Sagara Maharaj had offended a great personality, the heat of their bodies had increased, and they were burnt to ashes. But simply by being sprinkled with water from the Ganges, all of them became eligible to go to the heavenly planets. What then is to be said of those who use the water of Mother Ganges to worship her? Purport. Mother Ganges is worshipped by the water of the Ganges. A devotee takes a little water from the Ganges, like this. Put it in their hands like this. And then they offer that to the Ganges. So when the water is, Ganges does not lose anything. When the devotee takes out the water, because the Ganges is so big and powerful, when she takes out the water doesn't diminish. And when they offer it back to Mother Ganges, the water doesn't increase. So Mother Ganges does not increase, but in this way, the worshipper of the Ganges is benefited. Similarly, a devotee of the Lord offers the Lord patram pushpam param toyam, a leaf, flower, fruit, or water in great devotion. But everything, including the leaf, flower, fruit, and water, belongs to the Lord. And therefore there is nothing to renounce or to accept. One must simply take advantage of the bhakti process, because by following this process, one does not lose anything. One gains the favor of the Supreme Person. Text 13. Simply by having water from the Ganges come in contact with the ashes of their burnt bodies, the sons of Sagara Maharaj were elevated to the heavenly planets. Therefore, what to be said of a devotee who worships Mother Ganges faithfully with a determined vow? One can only imagine the benefit that accrues to such a devotee. Text 14. Because Mother Ganges emanates from the lotus toe of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Anantadev, she is able to liberate one from material bondage. Therefore, whatever is described herewith about her is not at all wonderful. Prabhupada's short purport. It has actually been seen that anyone who regularly worships Mother Ganges simply by bathing in her waters keeps very good health and gradually becomes a devotee of the Lord. This is the effect of bathing in the water of the Ganges. Bathing in the Ganges is recommended in all Vedic Shastras, and one who takes to this path will certainly be completely freed from all sins, sinful reactions. The practical example of this is that the sons of Maharaj Sagara went to the heavenly planets when the water from the Ganges merely touched the ashes of their burnt bodies. But we should also remember that the Ganges is so powerful and so glorious and being glorified here, but how much more so are the pure devotees of the Lord who are so powerful that they can purify the Ganges. So what conclusion do we reach by hearing this? That we really would like very much the association of pure devotees. Great sages, completely freed from material lusty desires, devote their minds fully to the service of the Lord. Such persons are liberated from material bondage without difficulty, and they become transcendentally situated, acquiring the spiritual quality of the Lord. This is the glory of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Bhagiratha had a son named Shuta, whose son was Nabha. This son was different from the Nabha previously described. Nabha had a son named Sindhudweep. From Sindhudweep came Ayutthayu, and from Ayutthayu came Rituparna, who became a friend of Nalaraj. Rituparna taught Nalaraj the art of gambling, and Nalaraj gave Rituparna lessons in controlling and maintaining horses. The son of Rituparna was Sarvakam. Gambling, Prabhupada explains in the purport, is also an art. Kshatriyas are allowed to exhibit talent in this art of gambling, because Kshatriyas always have to take a challenge. That is part of their psychological makeup. By the grace of Krishna, the Pandavas lost everything by gambling and were deprived of their kingdom, wife, family, and home, because they were not expert in the gambling art. In other words, a devotee may not be expert in materialistic activities. It is therefore advised in the Shastra that material activities are not at all suitable for the living entities, especially the devotees. A devotee should therefore be satisfied to eat whatever is sent by prasad, as prasad, by the Supreme Lord. A devotee remains pure because he does not take to sinful activities such as gambling, intoxication, meat eating, and illicit sex. Sarvakama, this is text 18, had a son named Sudas, whose son, known as Saudasa, Saudas was the husband of Damayanti. Saudas is sometimes known as Mitra Saha or Kama Sapad. Because of his own misdeed, Mitra Saha was sonless and was cursed by Vashishta to become a man-eater, a Rakshasa. You know what a Rakshasa is? Yes. You know what a man-eater is? What? Yes. Someone who eats people. Would you like to meet such a person who eats people? Why wouldn't you like to meet him? Yes. First thing he will do is say, come to my house for lunch. And you know what will be the lunch? You. And he'll say, bring your brother. Dessert. So this is an amazing thing. Because of his own misdeed, Mitrasa, or the Saudas, was sonless and was cursed by Vashishta to become a man-eater, Rakshasa. King Prickett said, O Sukadeva Goswami, why did Vashishta, the spiritual master of Saudas, curse that great soul? I wish to know of this. If it is not a confidential matter, please describe it to me. So Sukadeva Goswami is going to tell this little pastime, chronic pastime, mentioned in the Bhagavatam, of Saudas. Now, when I thought about this pastime, I understood in a very real sense, this is the way life goes. And we'll hear. Not exactly according to this, but there's such a tendency for life to overwhelm us despite our innocence, despite good intentions, etc. So let's listen to this pastime. Sukadeva Goswami began telling the story of Saudas. Are you going to get frightened if I tell the story? Okay. Will you? Okay. Once Saudas went to live in the forest where he killed a man-eater, Rakshasa. So there were two Rakshasas in the forest, and they were giving trouble to people in the forest, and he was a Kshatriya, so he went to the forest and killed him. But he forgave and released the man-eater's brother. He didn't kill his brother, the Rakshasa's brother. Was that a good deed? Seems like it. He was merciful. He was forgiving. That brother, however, decided to take revenge. Thinking to harm the king, he became the cook in the king's house. One day, the king's spiritual master, Vasishtha Muni, was invited for dinner. And the Rakshasa cook served him human flesh. This is called Rajniti, politics. You do something horrible, but there are no fingerprints. And you set a scenario so that the person who you want to get difficulty gets it, and no one knows that you are there. But while examining the food given to him, Vasishtha Muni, by his mystic power, could understand that it was unfit to eat. Being the flesh of a human being, he was very angry at this and immediately cursed Saudas. You become a Rakshasa. You've given me food, human flesh to eat. You become a Rakshasa. He cursed him. Now, Vasishtha Muni is the spiritual master. He should be blessing his disciple. Instead, he's cursing him. And what did he do wrong? He forgave and didn't kill the brother of the Rakshasa. He didn't do anything wrong. He was merciful. But sometimes life has its twists and turns, and you never know what's going to happen next. And sometimes we feel how unjustly we've been put into difficulty. So he was cursed by very powerful Vasishtha to become a Rakshasa. When Vasishtha understood that the human flesh had been served by the Rakshasa, not by the king, he undertook 12 years of austerity to cleanse himself for having cursed the faultless king. The king had been doing his duty in the forest by killing the Rakshasa. But yet, this is what happened. He was cursed. Meanwhile, King Saudas took water and chanted the Shapa Mantra. He wanted to curse Vasishtha back. But his wife, Madayanti, forbade him to do so. Don't do this. This is Vasishtha Muni. He's our spiritual master. You can't curse him back. Then the king saw that the 10 directions, the sky and the surface of the globe, were full of living entities anywhere, everywhere. I'm not sure. There's obviously some deep significance in that. Immediately, he didn't curse him, and then he had a vision that everything, there were living entities everywhere. But there's no explanation of what that means. But in any case, he was cursed. He didn't curse Vasishtha Muni back. So he did something good, yes? He didn't count the curse. He accepted it. Mridayanti, his wife, influenced him to accept it. So far, only unfortunate things have happened to him. Saudas then acquired the propensity of a man-eater and received on his leg a black spot for which he was known as Kamasapana. Once King Kamasapana saw a Brahmin couple engaged in sexual intercourse in the forest. He was in his Rakshasa. He was a Rakshasa. Being influenced by the propensities of a Rakshasa and being very hungry, King Saudas seized the Brahmana. But there he was. He was cursed. He had that propensity. Could he be blamed for that? He grabbed the Brahmana going to eat him. Then the poor woman, the Brahmana's wife, said to the king, "Oh hero, you're not actually a man-eater. Rather, you are amongst the descendants of Maharaj Ikshaku. Indeed, you're a great fighter, the husband of Madayanti. You should not act irreligiously in this way. I desire to have a son. Please therefore return my husband, who has not yet impregnated me. O king, O hero, this human body is meant for universal benefits. If you kill this body untimely, you will kill all the benefits of human life. Prabhupada chooses to explain about the benefits of human life, the actual benefits of human life in this purport, and we'll read this. Srila Narottama Das Thakur has sung, Hari Hari Vifale Janama Gonainu Manusha Janama Paya Radha Krishna Nabandhya Janiya Suniya Vishakainu. The body of a human being is extremely valuable because in this body one can understand the instructions of Krishna and attain the ultimate destination of the living entity. The living entity is within the material world to fulfill the mission of going back home, back to Godhead. Why is he in this world?
To go back
home. Very good. That's the mission of life. You're listening so carefully. In the material world, one hankers after happiness. But because one does not know the ultimate destination, one changes bodies, one after another. However, if he gets the opportunity to possess a human form of body, in this body, he can fulfill the four principles of Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. And if one is properly regulated, he makes further progress after liberation to engage in the service of Radha and Krishna. This is the success of life. To stop the process of repeated birth and death and go back home, back to Godhead, Mamiti, to be engaged in the service of Radha and Krishna. This is the success in life. Therefore, taking a human body is meant for completing one's progress in life. Throughout human society, killing of a human being is taken very seriously. Hundreds and thousands of animals are killed in slaughterhouses and no one cares about them. But the killing of even one human is taken very seriously. Why? Very interesting point. Why is the killing of one human so horrendous and abominable? Prabhupada asks the question and he answers it. Because the human form of body is extremely important in executing the mission of life. And what is the mission of life? To go back to Godhead, to learn to love Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. Will you make that the purpose of your life? Very good. So the Brahmani, the wife of the Brahmana, kept on pleading with Saudas, who was in the mood of a Rakshasa. She said, here is a learned, highly qualified Brahmana, engaged in performing austerity and eagerly desiring to worship the Supreme Lord, the Supersoul, who lives within the core of the heart of all living entities. My Lord, you are completely aware of the religious principles. As a son never deserves to be killed by his father, here is a Brahmana who should be protected by the king and never killed. How does he deserve to be killed by a Rajarishi like you, by a great king who's a sadhu, basically? So why was he in this Rakshasa mood? Because of this curse, which he didn't deserve. But yet he was in that mood of a Rakshasa. You are well known and worshipped in learned circles, she continued. How dare you kill this Brahmana, who is a saintly, sinless person, well versed in Vedic knowledge? Killing him would be like destroying the embryo within the womb, or killing a cow. Without my husband, I cannot live for a moment. If you want to eat my husband, it would be better to eat me first. For without my husband, I'm as good as a dead body. So she gave him so many reasons, powerful reasons, reasons that would tug at his heart. But he was in that mood of a Rakshasa, and his heart was hard as rock. So being condemned by the curse of Vashishtha, King Saudas devoured the Brahmana. You know what devoured means? Ate him up very fast. ate up the Brahmana. Even after his wife, the Brahmin's wife, had pleaded with him. Exactly, he ate him exactly as a tiger eats its prey. Even though the Brahmin's wife spoke so pityably, Saudas was unmoved by her lamentation. Prabhupada's purport. This is an example of destiny. Destiny has its turns. It doesn't seem to be fair in its way. Sometimes bad people are so successful. Sometimes good people seem to have such difficulties. This is fate. This is destiny. And ultimately, it is Krishna. So Prabhupada says, this is an example of destiny. King Saudas was condemned by the curse of Vashishtha, and therefore, even though he was well qualified, he could not restrain himself from being a tiger-like Rakshasa, for this was his destiny. Talabhyate dukavaranyatra sukam. As one is put into distress by destiny, destiny can also put one in a happy situation. Destiny is extremely strong, but one can change destiny if one comes to the platform of Krishna consciousness. Karmani nirdahati kintu cha bhakti bhajam. Niharam iva bhaskaram. So when the chaste wife of the Brahmana saw that her husband, who was about to discharge semen, had been eaten by the man-eater, she was overwhelmed with grief and lamentation. Thus she angrily cursed the king. So he was cursed again. Oh, foolish, sinful person, because you have eaten my husband, when I was sexually inclined and desiring to have the seed of a child, I shall also see you die when you attempt to discharge semen in your wife. In other words, whenever you attempt to sexually unite with your wife, you shall die. She cursed him. Thus the wife of the Brahmin cursed King Saudas, known as Mitrasaha. Then, being inclined to go with her husband, she set fire to her husband's bones, fell into the fire herself, and went with him to the same destination. After 12 years, when Saudas was released from the curse by Vashishtha, he wanted to have sexual intercourse with his wife. But the queen reminded him about the curse by the Brahmani, and thus he was checked from sexual intercourse. After being thus instructed, the king gave up the future happiness of sexual intercourse and by destiny remained sonless. This is what Sukadeva had said, one of the things he had first said, that he was sonless. Later, with the king's permission, the great saint Vashishtha begot a child in the womb of Madayanti. Madayanti bore the child within the womb for 7 years and did not give birth. Therefore, Vashishtha struck her abdomen with a stone and the child was born. Consequently, the child was known as Ashmaka, the child born of a stone. From Ashmaka, Balika took birth. Because Balika was surrounded by women and was therefore saved from the anger of Parsaram, he was known as Nari Kavacha, one who was protected by women. When Parsaram vanquished all the Kshatriyas, Balika became the progenitor of more Kshatriyas. Therefore he was known as Mulak, the root of the Kshatriya dynasty. So there's so many amazing stories in the ninth canto. So sometimes we hear everything is in the Bhagavatam, so everything is in the Bhagavatam. These amazing stories are there. And this is what it's like in the material world. Sometimes there's this quirk of fate and sometimes there's that quirk of fate. Sometimes happiness comes, sometimes distress, sometimes we're in difficult circumstances due to no fault of our own. Sometimes to no credit of our own. Some benefit comes to us. This is the material world. Such a rudderless place, in a sense. One doesn't know what's going to happen next. So what is the conclusion? In the material world, there really can be no security. Practically speaking, anything can happen and one doesn't know what it's going to be. Very insecure place. So the conclusion, once one realizes that, is to not waste one's time trying to enjoy this very dangerous padam padam vipadam. So much danger at every step, and instead one should end his relationship with the material world by awakening his relationship with Krishna. This is the purpose of life. The mission of life is to go back to Godhead, to develop one's loving relationship with Radha and Krishna. There it is eternal. This place is very quirky. From Balika came a son named Dasarath. From Dasarath came a son named Aidavidhi. From Aidavidhi came King Vishvasaha. The son of King Vishvasaha was the famous Maharaj Katvanga. Now, Katvanga Maharaj is mentioned in the second canto of the Bhagavatam. When Sukadeva Goswami, almost as soon as he begins to speak, he mentions Katvanga Maharaj to Maharaj Prickett, because Maharaj Prickett was in a very difficult situation. He was cursed to die within 7 days, and therefore he wanted to know what would he be able to do with this remaining part of his life. And Sukadeva Goswami explained to him clearly that one should hear about Krishna. One should focus his mind on Krishna somehow or another. Focus your mind on Krishna. This is the best of all things. So to give an example, because he only had 7 days left, to give an example to encourage Maharaj Prickett, he told how Katvanga Maharaj, once he was fighting on behalf of the demigods, and after the demigods asked him, what do you want? You fought so well on our behalf. And he replied, I just want to know how much longer I have to live. He didn't ask for any material benefits. He wanted to know that. And they said, your time has almost up. You have only a moment. So immediately, he surrendered to Krishna. So compared to that one moment that Katvanga Maharaj had, Sukadeva goes, Maharaj Prickett had such a long time to prepare himself to surrender fully to Krishna. So that was in the second canto, and now we'll hear a little more of Katvanga Maharaj and the mentality that he possessed. So Maharaj Katvanga was unconquerable in any fight. Requested by the demigods to join them in fighting the demons, he won victory, and the demigods, being very pleased, wanted to give him a benediction. The king inquired from them about the duration of his life and was informed that he had only one moment left, one moment more. Thus he immediately left his palace and went to his own residence, where he engaged his mind fully on the lotus feet of the Lord. The example of Maharaj Katvanga in performing devotional service is brilliant. Maharaj Katvanga engaged himself for only a moment in devotional service to the Lord, but he was promoted back to Godhead. So this should encourage us, but it shouldn't give us the excuse, well, if it only takes a moment, then I can put that moment off. Because if one has if one has other desires and has lived a life foolishly, it will be very difficult to focus one's mind on Krishna just at the last moment. But if one is very sincere, one can surrender to Krishna instantly. No preparation. This is wonderful. Therefore, if one practices devotional service from the beginning of his life, surely he will return home back to Godhead without a doubt, asamsaya. In Bhagavad Gita, the word asamsaya, which means without a doubt, is used to describe the devotee. There, the Lord himself gives this instruction. Maya Shaktamana Parta Yogam Yunjamarasaya Asamsayam Samagramam Yatagyasyasi Tatsvanu. Now hear, O son of Prita Arjuna, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, Krishna tells Arjuna, with full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt, with mind attached to me. The Lord also instructs, janma karma tame divyam mevam yo viti tatpata tatpadeyam pala janma naiti mameti. So Arjuna, one who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and disappearance does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but he attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. Therefore, from the very beginning of one's life, one should practice bhakti yoga, which increases one's attachment for Krishna. If one daily sees the deity in the temple, makes offerings by worshipping the deity, chants the holy name of the personality of Godhead, and preaches about the glorious activities of the Lord as much as possible, he thus becomes attached to Krishna. This attachment is called ashakti. When one's mind is attached to Krishna, maya shakta mana, one can fulfill the mission of life in one human birth. In one human birth, this is what we want to do, become attached to Krishna. What is it that Krishna has that can allow us to become attached to him? Krishna is all attractive. So if one hears about Krishna, learns about him, then naturally one becomes attached to him. Therefore, hearing is so important. And then putting into practice in our life Krishna consciousness and preaching about Krishna, preaching and worshipping and making offerings, that purifies the heart. It allows one to become attached. Now we have so many attachments other than Krishna, to Krishna. So many. But if we follow the process properly, then those attachments should decrease and our attachment to Krishna should increase. When one's mind is attached to Krishna, maya shakta mana, one can fulfill the mission of life in one human birth. If one misses this opportunity, one does not know where he is going, how long he will remain in the cycle of birth and death, and when he will again achieve the human form of life and the chance to return home back to Godhead. The most intelligent person, therefore, uses every moment of his life to render loving service to the Lord. So Maharaj Katvanga, he thought, not even my life is dearer to me than the Brahminical culture and the Brahmanas, who are worshipped by my family. What then is to be said of my kingdom, land, wife, children, and upbringing? Nothing is dearer to me than the Brahmins who read all his prayers. I was never attracted, even in my childhood, by insignificant things or irreligious principles. I did not find anything more substantial than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The demigods, the directors of the three worlds, wanted to give me whatever benediction I desired. I did not want their benedictions, however, because I was interested in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who created everything in this material world. I am more interested in the Supreme Personality of Godhead than in all material benedictions. Even though the demigods have the advantage of being situated in the higher planetary systems, their minds, senses, and intelligence are agitated by material conditions. Therefore, even such elevated persons fail to realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is eternally situated in the core of the heart. What then is to be said of others, such as human beings, who are pure advantages? Therefore, I should now give up my attachment for things created by the external energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I should engage in thought of the Lord and should thus surrender unto Him. This material creation, having been created by the external energy of the Lord, is like an imaginary town visualized on a hill or in a forest.
Every conditioned soul has natural attraction for material things, but one must simply give up this attachment and surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, Maharaj Katvanga, by his advanced intelligence in rendering service to the Lord, gave up false identification with the body which was full of ignorance. In his original position of eternal servitorship, he engaged himself in rendering service to the Lord. Final verse of this chapter. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudev, Krishna, is extremely difficult to understand for unintelligent men who accept him as impersonal or void, which he is not. The Lord is therefore understood and sung about by pure devotees. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Question? Were you afraid when I told that story of Sardas and how he ate the Brahmana? What would you do if a Rakshasa came to you and started eating you? Isn't that smart? But I'd chant really, really loudly as I ran, okay? Krishna, 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 save me! Hare Krishna! Gornatai, please save me! Srimati Radharani, Krishna, save me! Srila Prabhupada, save me! Can you scream and chant and run at the same time? Like that? And carry your brother too? You have to protect him too, but you have to call out loudly for Krishna to help you. Why is it non-different from devotional service? Prahlad Maharaj defines devotional service. The definition of devotional service is Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam. So, Shravanam, Kirtanam. So, Kirtan is devotional service. That's also service because it's done for Krishna's pleasure. That's proper chanting. It's done for Krishna's pleasure. The hearing is done for Krishna's pleasure. The remembering is done for Krishna's pleasure. Then it is pure devotional service. These are the main parts of devotional service in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu Lilita of devotion. Prabhupada explains there are 64 items of devotional service, and out of those 64 items, 5 are especially powerful, and one of those is Nama Sankirtan, chanting. When we worship the deity, we worship to please Krishna, therefore it's devotional service. Chanting the holy names, hearing about Krishna, speaking about Krishna, these are devotional service. It doesn't only mean work. Without, see, there's other definitions of devotional service. One is called, divides devotional service into 3 parts. Sarup Siddhi Bhakti, Arupa Siddhi Bhakti, and Sangha Siddhi Bhakti. Sarupa Siddhi Bhakti means those items that inherently, when one performs them, they inherently are non-different from Krishna. They're inherently, intrinsically devotional service. And those are like chanting Hare Krishna, the Bhagavatam, worshipping the deity. And then there's Arupa Siddhi Bhakti, which means, Arupa means impose. So say you have a job and you're working. That's not devotional service. But you take the fruit of that work and you give it to Krishna. So therefore you're imposing Krishna consciousness on something that is inherently not Krishna conscious. Completely different from Srup Siddhi Bhakti, which inherently is Krishna. It is Krishna. It's composed of the internal energy. And then there is Sangha Siddhi Bhakti, which means that they're not devotional service inherently, but in contact with devotional service, they become devotionalized. Just like if you're managing Krishna's temple or managing the book distribution or something like that, organizing this. It's not inherently devotional service, but because of its close proximity to devotional service, it's devotionalized. So those three are described by Srila Jiva Goswami. But the Sarup Siddhi Bhakti is the essential ones. And without that being strong, the chanting and hearing, the others will lack potency. Sometimes we get so involved in doing so many other things, we have no time. With so much devotional service, we have no time for devotional service. And that we have to watch out for. Therefore, Prabhupada always insisted very strongly on the sadhana. Okay, clear?